Welcome to the Morning Show on WRCO Radio. It's a fun topic today. We're talking about It's a Wonderful Life, which will be put on here in Spring Green in the coming days. And joining us in the studio, Patrick Hagen. Also today, Jay Roth and Jennifer Lloyd-Jones. If you know the name Patrick Hagen, maybe that sounds familiar to some people out there. It's been a while. Good morning, Patrick.
Hey, Phil. It's good to be here. It's been like 8 years.
I was going to say, you were the dean of the local campus. How long were you there?
I was there for 6 years.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I loved it. And unfortunately, we lost the campus, but we carry on, you know.
We do. Lots of great memories.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
So what are you kind of retired now then?
Yeah. I retired in Spring Green. I spent a year in China before I retired, starting a high school after I left the UW system. And one of my dreams in retirement was to get involved in theater again and to even have a chance to direct.
Oh, okay. And that's what you're doing with It's a Wonderful Life, which we're going to talk
about. In quotes.
In quotes.
No, I am directing, and I have a lot of support. It's a great experience to give it a try.
And it's coming up. What are the production dates, Patrick?
Well, we are going to do it on what's called the first weekend of Country Christmas in Spring Green. So we're going to do a show on the 7th, or on the 5th, which is a Thursday, 7 p.m. on the 5th. And then we've got some activities going on the 6th, which is the Friday. So we're not going to do a show on the 6th, but then we've got a show at 7 p.m. on the 7th. And then on Sunday, the 8th, we have a 1 p.m. show and a 6 p.m. show. So everyone's got to work extra hard on the 8th.
You're keeping the cast busy, aren't you?
Oh, absolutely. And keeping me busy, too. We have a cast of about 20, and so it's a real community theater. We've got everyone from someone who's around 80 years old to some kids that are 6 years old and everything in between.
So It's a Wonderful Life. Everybody knows the movie version. This is the radio drama or the radio production then, in other words.
Right. Jay, who's sitting to my right here, is a writer and is the adapter for our show. And we started talking about taking the story and Jay adapting what was the Lux Theater version of it with Jimmy Stewart and Donna Reed that was done in, I think, 47 in L.A. And so Jay took that script and has adapted it to Spring Green. So we're pretending that in 1947, Spring Green had its own professional radio company, and they, in this fictional 1947 that we're playing, they were doing this show live and broadcasting it nationally.
Wow, that's awesome. Jay, we'll welcome you into the conversation. You talked about the Lux Theater. This was common practice in those days, wasn't it, to do like a movie version on the radio?
Yeah, a couple different programs did it. Lux Radio Theater was the big one and the best one. They had their own theater space. It was a CBS program, and they had their own dedicated theater that did nothing but Lux. And they had a director and producer that specialized in sort of doing a Reader's Digest version of movies. And for the most part, they're pretty faithful. Except that if anybody's ever heard Lux Radio Theater, you know that they introduced the stars toward the end to endorse Lux soap and say how much they just we do not have Lux soap in our show, but we do have local sponsors mentioned throughout.
The actors will mention the local sponsors.
We're doing commercials. You bet.
Uh huh. Oh, yeah. That's awesome. So when you go to the production of this, what are we going to see on stage? Are there props, or are we just going to see, you know, like you would have seen a 1940s radio production?
Well, I think Patrick has kind of split the difference. Ah. If we did an absolutely authentic radio production from 1947, it would be kind of visually boring. But it was radio. That was the point. So Patrick has introduced elements of conventional theater. So there will be some props. There will be some furniture, some indications of mood and location and so on. So there's a little bit of each. But make no mistake, it is going to be a radio show, radio performance with microphones and theater of the mind. People will have to envision the full depth of the scenes as we proceed.
That's awesome. How have you worked in the Spring Green community into the script? Can you let us in on that a little bit?
Not real overtly. I wanted it to be more incidental. I didn't want to make a big point of it. So it's still set in Bedford Falls, as in the movie, and we're never quite sure where Bedford Falls is. And but it is the River Valley Radio Network that we mention and do our station ID with, and all local advertisers. It's sort of like civic media, but fictitious.
But you're a fan of old-time radio, obviously.
Yes, I am.
So this probably gives you a thrill to be involved in a production like this, doesn't it?
Oh, yes, very much, very much. It's great fun to do all of this and have a live microphone and interact with people on the stage and make some radio.
It probably has to move right along. I know I love the movie It's a Wonderful Life, but movies in that era did move. They moved a little bit slower. So is it kind of a more sped up version when you do the radio production version?
Well, Patrick can speak to that. He really has been working on the pacing quite a bit. And in radio drama, when people do this sort of thing, when they do a recreation of a radio show, I have found that it's much too slow. People who are familiar with radio drama know that it clipped right along at a very good pace, but people weren't doing five things while they were listening. They were paying attention to the show. And so they did move right along. And the writing is also such so that any important plot points or things that they should remember are repeated. So, you know, is that a gun in your hand? Yes, that is a gun in my hand. I see that gun in your hand. Yes, I have it. So there are some build-ins to make sure that people get the important points. But no, it does not drag. It moves right along.
Mm-hmm. Was that a challenge, Patrick, to kind of get this moving like you wanted it to move?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you have to study on like YouTube, the way that these things are created. The pacing is really important. I go back to personally, I love to read to my grandchildren. I love to read to my own children, and creating voices and, you know, slower, faster and that sort of stuff. So that's one of the things that inspired me to want to work on this is just the love of reading and telling stories to children, for starters. So, yeah, as Jay was suggesting, I mean, there are points when it really has to move fast, and then it'll slow down for the dramatic effect. And then, you know, like when George is realizing that he does have a wonderful life and that he's had a very difficult time, you know, it slows down and the lighting will be a bit different coming out of that. And so people will feel that. And other scenes, like when they go to Nick's bar, which is like the Pottersville dystopia of, you know, if George hadn't lived or been born, then it gets really dark and the bar scene has to move really fast. And we move through that. And then we get to Clarence and George thrown out of the bar into a snowbank. And then it gets real quiet. And they're, you know, so I mean, so it's going to have different pacing, and it's fun to work with everyone to try to get that right.
That's awesome. And I think we know the movie really well. Does that make it a challenge then to produce it? Like, you know, because I mean, I know what we're expecting when we go there. Does it make it a challenge to direct it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's not a story that I was even familiar with, believe it or not. I am an American, but I didn't really know it that well. I think that's true. One of the things that we had last night is Colleen Madden came in, who's an actor at APT, you know, a professional, and she sat in and she gave some notes afterwards. And one of the things she emphasized was the importance of storytelling and recognizing, you know, the words that you're telling are going to move the story along. So they need to be projected and they need to be heard, especially like Jay was saying, if those are new ideas that have been introduced into the story in a radio play, it's very important that they be delivered clearly. You know, even if you're like Mr. Gow and you're drunk, these things have to be delivered, you know, very clearly, because as we were talking about, the audience, it moves at a very fast pace. It's like Jay said, the Reader's Digest version, right? So it clips along, and it makes it all the more essential that the actors telling the story really get the words out there and project it and use their body as well to express their character.
Could you talk about your cast for us?
Oh, yeah. Well, Jennifer Lloyd-Jones is with us here, so I have to start with Jennifer. Jennifer is playing Mrs. Bailey and Mrs. Hatch, both of the mothers, and then some other characters. She's in the ensemble, and she'll be singing, so as well some numbers as part of the swing band part of the show. We have, as I said, a wide age range. We have people who've never been in a show before. We have people from ABT who have professional training in drama.
What is ABT?
American Players Theater. Yes, yeah, so there's the whole range. So there are some people, you know, who it's, you know, imagine stage fright. You know, you go on. Well, I seem to have heard rumors that you've played roles in community theater. So, you know.
I used to, yeah, back in the day when I had more time on my hands.
Yeah.
But I think once it's in your blood, it gets in there. It's hard to stay away from the theater then, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's what we're hoping. We have four kids. We have two pairs of kids playing the children, like young George Bailey and Lillian. Janie and Zuzu. And so these kids, I think it's their first production with, like, community theater. So that's been a lot of fun, bringing them into it. They've done Children's Theater of Madison, but they've never been, I think, in a cast with people from, you know, 80 to 8 or whatever.
This will be at the Guard Theater?
Guard Theater in Spring Green, an old vaudeville theater, so it's great for, you know, projecting your voice.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, you mentioned one of the cast members here, Jennifer Lloyd-Jones. We say good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm so happy to be here.
Great to have you in here. Were you familiar and a fan of It's a Wonderful Life?
Actually, like Patrick, although I am an American also, I was not familiar with the story.
Wow.
And so it's been really fun getting to know this story and watching the movie and then looking at the radio play, which is very similar to the movie in a lot of ways. You know, obviously there's some adaptations that are necessary for stage and then some that just make a little more sense as far as moving the plot along. But it's been really fun to explore. And I think the themes of, you know, how we impact our community and how each of us is interwoven into the community are really important. You know, we are in a divisive time right now, and you know, so many times it seems like we're at odds with each other, and it's really looking at how, you know, as a community we really matter to each other, and each person is integral to that pattern. So that's been really fun too.
Right, it's a timeless story, isn't it?
It really is, yeah.
Took place in the 40s, but it could happen right now.
It really could, yeah.
And
you know,
and I'm wondering too, not knowing a lot about it, you know, coming in with any preconceived things, does that help you prepare for your roles?
Yes and no. You know, because anytime you go into a role, you know, you sort of research it and get into the nitty gritty. And I think I didn't have any preconceived notions of how the character should be. So it was really great to work with Patrick on, you know, organically developing a storyline and a backstory for these characters and, you know, minor characters, but, you know, they really help move the story along. And, you know, so they're really integral to the storyline, even though, you know, I'm not prominent on stage, you know, a lot of the time, which is actually very nice for me. So, you know, it takes some of the burden off, and so I get to enjoy it all the more.
Do you change voices for each character?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. So each character has a slightly different voice and a, you know, slightly different attitude toward life and has a different backstory. And so it's been really fun to think about that and develop that.
Mrs. Hatch is one of the best scenes in the movie is when,
yeah.
when George is over there, you know, and he's courting, although he's not. And
she's listening in on the phone,
yes.
You know, but claims she isn't.
Claims she isn't, yeah. The old days where you could listen in on another extension. And
those party lines, right?
Yeah, party line. But that's a great scene. Now, is that in the production?
Oh, it sure is. It sure is, yeah.
Awesome. And I know you'll be singing beforehand. Can you tell us what you'll be singing?
So I will be singing, I'll be doing a duet with one of the other cast members, Salem, Walking in a Winter Wonderland, and then also doing the Christmas song, commonly known as Chestnuts Roasting on an Open Fire. So, and we have some other singers and an amazing band, so that's woven in. And so it's just, I think people who come to the show will just have a lot of fun.
You live in an area where you have a lot of people a lot of talented people that you can draw from. So it must be a really strong cast, it sounds
like. It is. It's an amazing cast. And even these young kids who've never been in a community theater production are so talented. And, you know, everybody brings their, you know, there's tons of experience in the cast from all walks of life, and they bring this, and so it really is a wonderful ensemble cast. You know, you know obviously the stars of the show, George and Mary, are extremely talented, and they really drive the show, but everybody is such an integral part to this production.
Interesting. Are there challenges, Patrick, with blocking this? You know, I'm trying to imagine, you know, it being a radio thing, right. But also, you know, when the characters are, do they look at each other when they're talking and things like that?
Yeah,
how does it work?
Jay was talking about that it's kind of a hybrid, that it has some dramatic elements. So went back and forth, you know, trying to figure out how to define space and who to position where. And so we're using three microphones, and, you know, the center microphone area we defined as kind of like George Bailey's space. And then, you know, we've got Clarence and Joseph in heaven. So that's one mic generally, you know, a bit further away. And then we've got a third mic where, you know, some more of the group scenes. And if someone's somewhat of a distance, like, you know, when George Bailey is outside of Mary Hatch's house and doesn't really want to go in, he's on one mic, she's on another, and she says, well, George, you know, aren't you coming in or not? And then she walks down to a mic that George is at, and then they're together. So we do a little bit of that kind of stuff, but it's basically positioning yourself. You're holding your script in hand, and so you're trying to have a free hand and use your body to help create your character and voice. And so that's the kind of movement there is. The other thing that goes on is we're all professional radio actors on the cast. So they're sitting around the periphery, and someone might go out for a smoke and come back in. Someone might go get a cup of coffee. You know, so it's supposed to look like you're at work. And that's up to the cast member to determine who they are and, you know, when they need a break or whatever.
It's going to be such a great addition to Spring Green Country Christmas this year, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. We're really excited to be part of that. It's a big program that the Chamber has put together, and I think it's really important that, you know, the Guard be used as part of that and get people in the Guard and have them hear a good story and have fun.
Absolutely. We'll have more about it coming up in a moment after this break on The Morning Show from WRCO. Welcome back to The Morning Show on WRCO. It's a Wonderful Life is the topic, and they're going to be putting it on River Valley Players' upcoming show in Spring Green at the Guard Theater. Joining us, Jay Rath, and we talked about Patrick Hagen being here and Jennifer Lloyd-Jones. We'll start with you again, Jay. You and I were kind of geeking out during the break there a little bit. But we like the history of It's a Wonderful Life. You know, and when that movie came out, I'm told that it was not that popular of a movie, was it?
No, it was a big disappointment. It was the first film that Frank Capra, the director, and one of the writers, and Jimmy Stewart did after World War II. So they were a little bit anxious. Would they still have an audience? Would the movie be able to find an audience? And Donna Reed was, I think, 18 years old. So everybody was pretty anxious. But it seemed surefire, and the early reviews were glowing, and then it didn't go anywhere. Part of that was due to the release dates, and for whatever reason, it didn't do well at the time. And it's strange. When Lux Radio Theater did it, they trimmed out a bunch of stuff that later, because we all know the movie from endless reruns, a lot of elements of the story that are familiar to us were not in the Lux Radio Theater production. So one of the things I had to do was go back and put those in. But no, it didn't really catch fire then till it went into reruns on television. The movie lapsed into public domain, so stations didn't have to pay to air it. And that's why it got heavy rotation during the holidays. And people finally recognized it for what it is.
Now, remember, I think it was in the 1970s when it started to kind of gain popularity and a whole new following.
Yes, and then people tried to colorize it and claim copyright and do all sorts of things. But yeah, definitely in the 70s and by the 80s, it was, you know, I think it was a well-established classic.
I am told that you had a personal connection with Frank Capra. Could you talk about that?
Yeah, Frank or Mr. Capra, and I corresponded through conventional mail. We did that in those days. He was a very kind, very patient man, and he was, at the time, he was sort of having a second life visiting colleges. He was up at UW Stevens Point lecturing. He'd just written an autobiography. So I began a correspondence with him, and one of the, I was interested especially in his work with silent movies. He worked for Max Sennett. But then, of course, we spoke about his other films, especially It's a Wonderful Life, which was his favorite film of all time. And so it was interesting to explore the dynamics of the film and hear about his own pride in it, and then, of course, disappointment initially in that it couldn't find an audience.
It was an all-star cast at the time. You know, Donna Reed was in there, and, of course, Jimmy Stewart comes to mind.
H.B. Warner, Beulah Bondi played the mom. A lot of well-recognized people. Henry Travers, who played Clarence the Angel, is familiar to people from Bells of St. Mary's with Bing Crosby. A lot of well-known character actors.
Mr. Potter.
Lionel Barrymore.
Lionel Barrymore,
yeah, right.
Ooh.
Yeah.
And he was in a couple of other movies. I think he was in It Happened One Night. You Can't Take It With You. I think he'd been in that one a few years earlier. So I think he was a favorite of Capra, too.
Yeah, and it turns out that he was an old friend of Max Sennett's, too. So they were all sort of cozy together at the time.
Certainly. And you're a fan of old-time radio, too. I mean, there's just something magical and special when you hear some of those playbacks, isn't it?
Yeah, I grew up listening to Art Oster on Wisconsin Public Radio, and he had a show called Play It Again, Art. And he, so I, you know, other kids would go home and watch stuff on television. I went home or stayed in school afterward and listened to The Great Gildersleeve or Mr. First Nighter or Nightbeat. Or it was an interesting way to grow up and came to know it as a wonderful art form that sadly is largely lost today. I think we're starting to kind of see it return with podcasts, but that's really a completely different thing. And I do think that the wheel will turn full circle. I do think radio drama will come back.
When you're talking about making a theater of the mind, but also in the theater too, that probably presents some challenges to you when you're writing the script, doesn't it?
It does and it doesn't. With radio drama, you depend on some crutches. There are some conventions that you rely on. And as soon as you put it on stage, you can get rid of those. But then you have a whole new flock of conventions, a whole new bunch of things. So it's sort of trading things back and forth. They are different art forms.
Most definitely. Have you been involved in a lot of other productions?
Yes.
Quite a resume.
In Madison, yes, yeah. And then I've done some independent indie film, and have done quite a bit of radio drama before. I co-founded a radio troupe called Radio Pirates. We did satellite feeds to National Public Radio for about 8 years and had specials and things, and I think it was just last year for WGN Radio. They were celebrating their centennial, so I went down there and produced I think 4, 5, 6 different sketches in honor of their centennial that they could rotate in. So that was fun.
Do you like being on in front of the microphone or on the other side of the microphone the best?
Oh, I like both, but I guess I enjoy the writing more. It's a real challenge.
Awesome. So do you actually have mics set up of the era for the production, Patrick?
Yeah, we do. We just got them yesterday, I think it was, or the day before. And so they look very authentic and they're functioning well. They are, I think, aren't they, Jay? They're actually, you know, from the period mics.
Yeah. We had been using other lookalike mics, but as a radio person yourself, you know that the sound quality is different. So fortunately, one of our cast members is a friend of a collector who loaned us three precious 1940s, early 1950s microphones.
They're the box microphones then?
No, that's an RCA ribbon mic, and those are real fragile and real valuable. But no, this would be just after that.
Okay.
So these look like big hammerheads.
Okay. But they're usable, they're workable then, right?
Yeah, and they do have a real different sound quality.
Uh-huh.
It almost gives it a period feel immediately.
Awesome. We just went by Halloween, but it's a we talk about Orson Welles and War of the Worlds. That's probably one of the most famous of those radio productions, isn't it?
Yeah, a friend of mine and I did a whole parody of that. That was our first, or I guess second special on National Public Radio. We did an hour-long parody of that, in which the Martians win. I produced that with Scott Dickers, who was the founding editor of The Onion, and he was the co-founder of the Radio Pirates. But that was a lot of fun.
Awesome. Yeah, it sounds like it. This is Wonderful Life is also it's a benefit. You know, you're not doing this for profit, Patrick.
Yeah, one of the things that we're going to do. Jennifer was talking about, you know, the theme of how integral we all are to others in our lives and in creating community, and so we decided. Right at the start, we came up with the concept that we wanted to support the local food pantries. And so the show will, any of its profits will go to the local food pantries. And then in addition, we have two 6-year-old girls named Mildred and Nora. They are the applause girls. And so they'll be coming out with signs when Jay's doing his announcing role at the end of an act. Big signs that'll say applause. And then, you know, in the story, George Bailey at the end gets this basket with $8,000 in it to basically save the building and loan. Well, we're going to find a kind of basket like that and put the applause girls out at the exit so that everyone can generously throw something into the, you know, the applause girls basket to benefit the food pantries as well.
Oh, that's a great concept right there.
Yeah. Oh, thanks.
Yeah, that's just awesome. I think it's going to be a great production. Jennifer, as we talk about this, it's got to be a thrill to get together and to do this. As an actress, is this a real plum role for you?
It really is. It's really fun. You know, it's each of my roles is so different that, you know, and I really can kind of, you know, milk the nuances of of the different characters, and that it's super fun. And, you know, with such a talented cast, you know, the sum of the cast is always greater than each individual. And working with such talented individuals, it just sends it through the roof. So it's really been a blast.
You mentioned before, it is a timeless theme, though, isn't it?
It really is. You know, it really applies to today as much as it did in 1947, you know, that each person is so integral to the community, and you take that one person out and, you know, everything kind of falls to pieces. And, you know, so sometimes we think, oh, we're not particularly important, or no, you know, maybe our contribution isn't, you know, as great as someone else's. But, you know, when you really look at it, we're all so integral to each other. I keep using that word, but, you know, it's really so that message that even if things seem a little down or they seem dire, you know, that really the contributions we're making are invaluable.
I think we all have a tendency to feel sorry for ourselves from time to time. And you look at that and you're like, oh, maybe sometimes I do make a difference, right?
Yeah, I think it's human nature, you know, to be like, oh, you know, well, you know, things are terrible. And, you know, my husband and I often joke about our first world problems. And, you know, so, you know, it really is just a wonderful reminder that, yeah, each of us is valuable, and that it's so important to take care of each other and be a community, and to, you know, let those minor differences fall away and really find it what connects us.
I've always found at the end of the movie, it's hard to not get a tear in your eye.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So I'm guessing that'll be the case when we see it in spring.
Well, if we do a good job, then yes.
Hopefully not crying for the wrong reason, Patrick.
Yeah, right. When you're just doing it for the first time, you worry about that.
Hey, how can people get tickets?
Yes, well, we've got two opportunities. You can go online to rivervalleyplayers.org. So rivervalleyplayers.org. And once you go on there, there is a drop-down menu up on the left-hand side, and you can pick, you know, buy tickets, and then you can go through, and it's pretty easy to do. You'd need to use a credit card or a debit card. And then it'll print off the tickets. Well, it'll send you an email with a link to the tickets. You can print them off. Now, if you want to do it in the 1940s way, you can go to North Earth Crystals and Gifts in Spring Green, and you can buy tickets there in person. All you need is some cash, right, Jennifer?
Or you can write a check to Rainier Valley Players.
That is old school. I like that. You know, going to the box office and buying a ticket. You can do it that way, too. So.
And you can buy tickets the night of. I mean, I can't tell you right now. I think we've sold about 200 tickets. We have a total capacity of 800. So that's about where we're at right now. Hoping to fill the house every show, but you never know.
It's probably very premature to ask this, but what's on down the road for River Valley Players? Anything planned beyond this one?
Well, you know, that's a good question. You know, last year we did in the spring the Frog and Toad musical. Great show. And that's about friendship. This show is about community. So I think we're going to have to sit down as a board. I serve on the board as well. And talk about, you know, when you do community theater, you have to look at, you know, the demands on people. People have jobs. And, you know, so how much time for rehearsal goes into it. This time of the year, for instance, it's, you know, we're getting ready for Christmas. We've got Thanksgiving this week. And so we decided to do a radio play because you can do it script in hand. And that's very authentic. It takes the pressure off the actors. So one of the things that community theater has to consider is how to do shows that are meaningful to the community and also, you know, place demands on the actors, the musicians, that don't go beyond what they can comfortably handle. And because we want them to be happy, and as Jennifer said, have fun. You know, it's not good community theater if you're not having fun. So I'm excited to see what we'll pick up. I think we'll probably do something in the spring. I don't know what it is yet. But I think it'll be something good.
How much do you utilize or work with American Players Theater then?
Well, you know, did I mention that last night Colleen Madden was there? Yeah, I did. I'm getting older, you know, Phil. So she did a workshop for us on using your voice and warming up and how to develop character. A lot of the furniture in the show, period furniture especially, has been loaned to us by APT. So they're one of our sponsors. And you know, for instance, the person who made the poster that we can't show on the radio show, but it works at APT in communications. She's also playing Mary Hatch, one of the leads. So, you know, talent, if you go on River Valley Players on Facebook, you'll see all kinds of profiles of all the actors who are in the show. She's made those. And then she's also made with Jay a number of promotional videos that are just brilliant. And again, that's combining Jay's talent with Hannah's talent and doing the best for the show. So APT is American Players Theater is very important to us.
Awesome. Well, I think four of the performers are from APT staff. Yeah. They're not equity performers, but there are performers. and they're also loaning costume parts and. Our closing night is also the night of their annual holiday party, so we're going to expect a quarter of the house to be full of them. So that'll be sort of fun.
So that Jay's might be a fun night to come.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jay's Tux comes from APT.
Yes.
And you're the announcer for the program.
Yes, I am.
Do you do after a word from our sponsor? Do you do that as
we
well?
We do all of that. We break for network identification, so the local stations can break in. We do all of that. And we'll even have a three-chime trademark.
Awesome.
Not the NBC one. It'll be
close.
Our yes.
It'll be the River Valley Radio Network.
Yes.
Chime. Okay.
Yes. If Civic Media needs one, let us know.
We might.
We'll provide one.
Well, this is probably a hard question today. What's your favorite part of the whole story?
Oh, gosh. I guess it would be when Clarence enunciates the realization. He has a speech, and I know it by heart. It's strange, isn't it? Each man's life touches so many others, and when he's gone, it leaves an awfully big hole. I guess that's my favorite moment in the show.
That is. That's a great moment. What about you over here on this side, Jennifer?
Well, I tend toward the comedic side, and I love it when Clarence jumps, after he's jumped in the river, and they're in the, you know, they're drying off in the bridge keeper's shack, and that, you know, George is discovering that Clarence is an angel. And, you know, it's just a very funny part of the show. That's my favorite.
Awesome. Patrick?
Well, I think you alluded to it, Phil. It's that scene where you've got Mrs. Hatch with Jennifer, and you've got Sam Wainwright, the kind of, you know, sleazy entrepreneur, I'll call him, and we have a wonderful one. And then you've got George and Mary, and there's all this talking on the phone, and phones ringing, and George isn't certain if he's in love or not, and, you know, he's going through all this, you know, sort of dramatic experience, and Jay adapted it beautifully. It's really well done. It's a great scene, and you already said you liked it, and the way he did it is just brilliant.
Yeah. George, Mary, Mary, Mary.
Yes. That's exactly the way it was in the movie, so we had to change that, because in radio, that gets to be a bit much.
The only part that I don't like in the movie version is they break that record of Buffalo Girls in there. Do you guys do that? Or no?
We pretend.
You pretend. Okay. Is there a sound effects person too?
Of sorts, yeah.
Is there?
A couple people, I think, covering effects, plus I mean, someone's given order to the music. Then we have someone up in our sound booth who's covering a lot of it. And so, yeah. Oh, yeah, it's fully produced.
We considered doing live sound effects, and but my position on that was... that's a whole nother specialty, and some people do it really well. In fact, I don't know if it was you, Phil, or somebody told me that you do something with a teacher in Muscadet. And,
oh, yes.
And
Mr. Simonson.
And they actually produce the sound effects, don't they?
They do.
And I have to listen to that sometime. We considered doing that, but we just, I felt personally that there was just, they were doing so much. You know, we've got live music, and we have 18 people in the cast. If you had the applause girls, it's 20. And so what we did is Gwen Schwanke, who used to do theater here in Richland Center as well, and she's our tech person, she's getting all the sound effects together, and she's using something called QLab. I don't know, maybe that's something you use too. I don't know. But she's getting all the sound effects on that. And so she just needs to, when she gets them picked up, push a button. So we talked about all the details, like, okay, when the car's driving up, do you want it to be a Buick or a Ford? Or, you know, she was asking that level of detail, which
wow.
is kind of fun.
You can get that specific.
Yeah, I guess.
That is pretty cool. It just really sounds like it's going to be a tremendous show. You just need people in the seats, right?
That's right.
Good. And we hope that maybe our broadcast today is going to help that. So, again, coming up at the Guard Theater. And could you go over the dates of the performances again, Patrick?
Oh, absolutely. So we start on December 5th, which is a Thursday, a 7 p.m. show. And then we skip Friday because of Country Christmas and some events that are going on. And then on Saturday the 7th, we have a show at 7 p.m. And on Sunday the 8th, we have a show at 1 p.m. and 6 p.m.
Great. We hope people will make it a part of their holiday season. So thanks for coming in, you guys.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Phil.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Patrick Hagen joining us along with Jay Rath and Jennifer Lloyd-Jones, members of River Valley Players on The Morning Show.